Just a quick note, just so y'all are aware, Ashley and I are going to take off tomorrow morning to go to the Tennessee, Kentucky area, spend some time with my family up there. Got a bunch of babies coming along the way. Ashley's pregnant. Two of my sister-in-laws are pregnant, one on my side, one on her side. You know, so it's good to spend some good time together before babies ruin it all. I mean, make it all better. Make it all better. Enhance our time together. So we're really excited to be able to spend some time with them. We'll be with them for just over a week, and we'll get back probably next Wednesday, Lord willing. So please pray for us and for our safety. Really appreciate y'all letting me do that and take some time and to relax and step away from some responsibilities for a week or so. Open up your Bibles to Luke chapter 16. Luke chapter 16. We're going to be considering the text from verses 1 through 15 this morning. Jesus is, or Luke rather, is in this section where he's talking about and crafting these stories and teachings of Jesus that really ask this question: who is a follower of Jesus? What does a real follower of Jesus look like? And so we're going to be answering that question this morning. But along with that, I want you to be asking the question: how does Jesus want us to use our possessions? How does he want us to use our wealth? And I'll be clear from the beginning this morning. We are going to talk about wealth and possessions quite a bit. And if you're here in the audience this morning and you're like, well, I've got two pennies and this is kind of difficult to apply, recognize then that I'm not trying to tell you that you need to go take out a loan and then give away your money or something like that, or give something that you don't have. We can talk about things like that in another lesson. But this will be especially helpful for those of us who have more than two pennies to our name, which would be most people, here and most people in America. But if you're in this situation where you don't really have much of anything, don't take this as discouragement that you can't participate in this, but think rather of how you can be a good steward, not just of your possessions, but of your time and of your talents. And also later on, if God blesses you with possessions, being a good steward of the things that you're given. Let's go ahead and read the parable here that Jesus gives in verses 1 through 8. He also said to the disciples, "There was a rich man who had a manager, and charges were brought to him that this man was wasting his possessions. And he called him and said to him, 'What is this that I hear about you? Turn in the account of your management, for you can no longer be manager.' And the manager said to himself, 'What shall I do, since my manager is taking the management away from me? I am not strong enough to dig, and I am ashamed to beg. I have decided what to do, so that when I am removed from management, people may receive me into their houses.' So, summoning his master's debtors one by one, he said to the first, 'How much do you owe my master?' He said, 100 measures of oil. He said to him, 'Take your bill and sit down and quickly and write 50. Then he said to another, 'And how much do you owe?' He said, 100 measures of wheat. He said to him, 'Take your bill and write 80. The master commended the dishonest manager for his shrewdness. For the sons of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than the sons of light." Now, before we try to see what the explanation and application of this parable is, I think it's kind of helpful just to step back for a moment and try to understand what just happened. So we have this owner who has apparently so many possessions that he needs various people to kind of take care of those possessions and make sure that they're being used properly, maybe even to get some gain through debts and lending and things like that. Well, this owner has a particular manager of his possessions who he has found out that he's been wasting the owner's possessions. And so the owner says to the manager, "Listen, your time is up. You can no longer be my manager. Turn in the possessions that I gave you charge of, and you're no longer going to be the manager." Well, the manager says, "Oh, no. What am I going to do? I'm this weak guy with preacher hands, you know. I'm this weak guy. I can't dig. I'm too weak to dig. And I'm definitely way too ashamed to beg. How in the world am I going to be able to take care of myself whenever I give up my management? I have an idea. I have a way that I will be able to be taken care of by some people, and I'll be able to stay in their house when my management is taken away. And he doesn't tell us what his idea is, but it shows us what he does. Here's his way to make sure he's taken care of whenever the bad times come and the owner takes his management away. He goes to his owner's clients, who the owner has lent them some oil and some wheat and some other things potentially as well. And he goes to one of them and he says, "How much do you owe my master?" And the first one says, "Well, I owe him 100 measures of, I believe it is, oil." And he says, "Well, hey, write down, change that number. Cut that in half. You only owe my master 50 now. I'm gonna get you a good deal here." And then he goes to another person, and another person says, "Well, I owe 100 measures of wheat." He says, "Cross that out, write 80. You only owe my master 80 measures of wheat." And he goes on like this with some of the master's clients. And now, it might be kind of hard for us to relate to this. We're like, well, 100 measures of oil being changed to 50 and 100 measures of wheat being changed to 80. Doesn't sound like a lot. Actually, this is a tremendous, cutting down of debts. It's about a year and a half's worth of wages. So, you know, imagine a working person, making somewhere in between $30,000, $50,000, something like that. We're talking about a good chunk of money here, for the common laborer that he's cutting down for them. And what he's wanting, though, is to make friends with them here. They have no clue that he's being fired. At least it seems that way. They don't seem to know what's going on. But he's hoping to be able to make some sort of a good deal with them so that they like him a lot, make some friends with that money. And the owner comes to the manager and he actually commends him. He says, "Wow, that was pretty smart of you." Now, keep in mind, he's not commending him for being dishonest and ripping him off. That's not what he's commending him for. He's commending him because he was shrewd. He was clever. He thought about the future and he realized, hey, I'm about to be kicked out on the street and I'm going to need some friends. I'm going to need a place to stay. And so if I cut down on my master's debts, then I'm going to be able to come back to them later on and say, "Hey, remember when I saved you a bunch of money? I need a place to stay." And they'll take care of him. So the master says, "Hey, that was pretty shrewd of you. That was pretty clever." And that's the end of the parable. And we're left wondering, well, man, this is a parable about quite a dishonest person here. How in the world could Jesus be telling us this parable and commending this manager to us? Well, let's see, what is it that Jesus commends to us about this man? Let's look at how the parable is explained by Jesus in verses 9 through 13. Jesus says there, "And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of unrighteous wealth, so that when it fails, they may receive you into eternal dwellings. One who is faithful in very little is also faithful in much. And one who is dishonest in very little is also dishonest in much. If then you have not been faithful in the unrighteous wealth, who will entrust to you the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in that which is another's, who will give you that which is your own?" Let's go ahead and stop there for the moment. So what Jesus is going to be commending here, as we see at the end of the parable in verse 8, is the master commends the manager for his shrewdness, for being clever. He was able to think about this time when he was, when his riches were going to fail him, and when he wasn't going to have a job, and he did something about it. He did something about it. And so the question that we need to ask ourselves here as we look at Jesus' explanation is, how can we be clever? How can we be shrewd like this manager was and think about the future in the right way? I want you to notice the first thing that Jesus says here. He says that he wants us to make friends with unrighteous wealth. Now you might be wondering, well, why is Jesus calling this unrighteous wealth? What Jesus does throughout this text here is he compares unrighteous riches with true riches. And it's not that riches of this world are in of themselves unrighteous, but the idea is probably that they are corrupting and they are dangerous, and there's a lot of unrighteousness that is often tied to them, and they are dangerous to hold on to, as we will see in this text. But Jesus says he wants us to make friends with it, and he says the reason why he wants us to do this is because this unrighteous wealth will fail us. I like how he says that. So that when it fails, they may receive you into eternal dwellings. I think that's really important to remember for just a moment. The question is not, is your wealth going to fail you? The certainty is, our wealth will fail us. The possessions we have will fail us. I remember on my dad's license plate growing up, it said, "The one who dies with the most toys still dies." That's right. You don't get to take them with you. It doesn't affect us all at all in eternity. And whether they fail us here in this life or not is sometimes a question. But make no mistake, they will fail us one day. On the day of judgment, there will be nothing we can do. Our riches will have no standing. We can't say, "Hey, Jesus, I was able to accrue enough of a sum that I'd like to give you a little money for eternal life here." It's not going to work that way. There's nothing that those riches can do for us. And so he says, you need to be shrewd. You need to be clever. Think about the future and realize that since that wealth is going to fail you, what should we do? We should realize that we're not secure, for one. It isn't that tough, because riches oftentimes do make us secure. Well, how do we deal with that then? If they make us feel so secure and they're not actually going to secure us. Jesus says, make friends with this unrighteous wealth so that when it fails, they may receive you into eternal dwellings. It's kind of an odd way of saying that, isn't it? We make friends in this world with the possessions we have so that those friends, in a sense, will receive us into eternal dwellings. It's kind of odd. A lot of people kind of debate about that. Is this just an odd way of referring to God receiving us into eternal dwellings, or an odd way of referring to how the friends that we make with our possessions, they'll receive us into the eternal dwellings? In the end, we're supposed to be making friends with the wealth so that we will be received into those eternal dwellings. We're supposed to think smartly and cleverly. Jesus makes this interesting note in verse 8. He says, "People of this world, the sons of this world, are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than the sons of light." The bottom line, brothers and sisters, is that sometimes people in this world are a little bit smarter than we are about thinking about the future. And they deal with one another in sometimes a little bit of a smarter way. They think about the future and they realize, you know, I'm going to need to make some friends with this money. Otherwise, I'm going to be in trouble. And sometimes we can be so innocent-minded that we don't realize that actually that's a very wise and clever way of thinking. I'm not always going to have this wealth. I better make some friends with it so that I'll be taken good care of whenever this wealth fails me. So then I'll be received into eternal dwellings. I love this admonition. And I'm not going to try to explain it more, because Jesus doesn't explain it more. The bottom line is, Make friends with your wealth, and you'll have eternal dwellings. That's what Jesus wants us to do with the wealth. The second explanation or application that Jesus gives here is in verses 10 through 13. He essentially says that there is this principle. If you're faithful in a little bit, you'll be faithful in a lot. I'm not going to entrust you with a lot if you haven't proven first that you're faithful with the little. And you're not going to receive true riches if you're not faithful with the unrighteous wealth. This is an idea that seems to pop up a few times in Scripture. This idea that how we behave now affects the authority and the reward that we're going to be given later on. And I've often, and maybe you've done this as well, I've often kind of avoided that kind of language because it makes us, at least makes me a little bit uncomfortable. No. The idea is that you get baptized, you become a Christian, you receive grace, and then you go to heaven. And we have this nice two-dimensional, way of looking at salvation. And it's a biblical way of looking at salvation, right? But it's not the only biblical way of looking at salvation. There's more to it than you get saved and then you go to heaven. Apparently, there is more. Jesus says, listen, you want to be managers of true wealth later on? Do what I want you to do with your unrighteous wealth right now, with that little bit that you have right now. That's really interesting. And we know that that principle is true from this world, right? It works on the job, right? The day we walk into a job, they don't promote us to the highest status and give us charge over the whole company or even over a whole sector. They start us out to see how responsible we are, if we're going to be faithful in just a little bit. And if we show ourselves to be faithful in a little bit, then gradually they'll trust us with more and more and more. And God says that's the same way it works. And brothers and sisters, he's telling us that right now we're in testing grounds. He's saying, you got wealth. I've given it to you. Now I'm telling you how to use it. Make friends with it and show me that you're going to do what I want you to do with my possessions. That's pretty motivating. I like to take away the three-dimensional picture here of the reward because it makes me uncomfortable. But actually, when we bring back in this three-dimensional picture, it's actually quite motivating. Why shouldn't I make as many friends as possible with my wealth? Why shouldn't we be generous as possible? After all, we're proving to the master that we're worthy of true, eternal riches that will not fade away. Hey, sounds like a great deal. Sounds like a great deal after all. How we behave now then, brothers and sisters, determines that. But Jesus then gives two warnings about this. As we think about this, we're like, wait a second. I thought my wealth was given to me to make me happy, for me to serve myself. This is a different way of thinking about it. Okay, so I need to make friends. Okay, all right, I need to make friends with my wealth. Okay, so how can I serve myself and serve God? I want to have both feet firmly planted in both those things. I want to be able to do both those things. All right, let's see how we can do this. Well, Jesus knows what we're thinking. And so notice what he says in verse 13, no servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. Jesus gives two warnings here in verses 13 through 15, and this is the first one. You cannot serve God and money. He knows exactly what we're thinking. He knows, like, okay, they're going to start thinking, how can we have one foot firmly planted and enjoying the pleasures of this world, and one foot firmly planted in serving God and doing what he wants us to do? And Jesus says, you can't do it. Think about that for a moment. I know we all kind of want that, right? There's this little desire, like, well, I'd like to I like to serve money a little bit. It gives me good things. And I want to be able to get both. Serve them both. Jesus says, you're going to hate me if you try to do that. I'm going to be like this person that's always taking you away from the master that you really love. You can't serve two masters. What a warning. If we want riches to provide security for us, we must sacrifice security with God. You want that? If we want the security of riches, brothers and sisters, we will sacrifice God. If we want to serve God, we will have to sacrifice the master of riches. And we're going to have to sacrifice a lot of financial gain. Money is so tricky, isn't it? And our hearts are so deceptive, as God says through Jeremiah. The heart is so deceptive, it wants to just, there's going to be a way. It won't be 50-50, but at least 25-75. At least if you get 25, money as the master. But I think that's important to think about this for a second, though, and realize Jesus is talking about two masters. This is the problem, is money becomes a master. We try to accumulate as much as possible, get more. But what we don't realize is we think that it's serving us, but in reality, it's become this master. It's like, you know, Ashley really wants to get this dog. And so when we go up to Nashville, we're going to pick up a dog. And she thinks, she is so convinced that this dog is just going to, you know, it's going to serve us. It's going to be so happy. And we're already realizing, oh no, we can't go on that vacation. We can't go on this vacation. We're the servant of the dog. We're going to run around with it and pick up its poop. Does that sound like a master to you? It's the same way with money. Run around, make all these huge sacrifices. Brothers and sisters, what kind of sacrifices has money demanded that we make for it? Actually, it makes us sacrifice a lot. It makes fools of us, like the dog does sometimes. So Jesus says, you can't do that. You can't try to serve them both. How can we know? How can we know if we're serving money or serving God? These questions aren't in the text, but I think you might find them to be helpful. I thought of three questions that are helpful that try to dig into my heart. And I want to say this from the outset. When it comes to money, this is such a sensitive subject for each of us that it's really easy to look outside of ourselves and start judging other people. Let's be clear, we can't judge other people's hearts. The choice of Jason to read that passage was actually kind of perfect in the beginning. Really, judge not, lest you be judged with that same measure. As we ask these questions, don't be thinking, yeah, I think that other person is serving money. Oh, man, glad they're here for this sermon. No. Let's look inside ourselves and only think of our own hearts as we ask these questions. What is the basis by which we are making life's small decisions and big decisions? Is it our relationship with money? Or our relationship with God and His people? What's the basis? When I manage my wealth, or my money, or my possessions, who am I seeking to serve? Am I seeking to serve myself, or am I seeking to make friends with it? Is generosity a joy or a necessary evil? A joy that we think, hey, this is a smart decision for the future. Or this is really foolish. I can't believe I'm doing this. This hurts a lot, but okay, I guess I'll do it anyway. Good questions, maybe, to ask ourselves. Notice the second warning that Jesus gives. And it's really in the response to this teaching. Verse 14, the Pharisees, who were lovers of money, heard all these things, and they ridiculed him. And he said to them, "You are those who justify yourselves before men, but God knows your hearts. For what is exalted among men is an abomination in the sight of God." Money is such a touchy subject. And when we ask the question, are you serving money? It starts to become like this dagger coming towards our heart, a fly coming towards our eyes. And we put something over our heart and defend, and we close our eyes and defend. Stay away, don't ask that question. And the Pharisees get quite defensive and they start trying to cover their tracks. My brother always told me in training that to not be concerned if people got really defensive after a sermon and started coming after you, because it means that you probably said the right things. And if someone's getting defensive, it means the arrow went right into the heart, not that you said something wrong. And I think that's what Jesus says here, is it was an arrow right to the heart, because the Pharisees, it says, they were lovers of money. And so that's why they start ridiculing Jesus. And a good question to ask ourselves right now is this. As I'm listening to Jesus talk here, am I getting defensive and thinking, no, I'm fine, I'm doing things fine? Or are we thinking, okay, I'll let this probing into my heart. I'll let Jesus probe in my heart for a little bit and judge me. I'll let Jesus judge me and see if everything's okay. That could be a good test to see if we've been as sensitive to Jesus' teachings as we should be, or if our hearts have this armor over it of rock. And the Pharisees, they had rock solid hearts with respect to this, to protect their master and their love, money. And Jesus says, you know, you're justifying yourself before men, but that's not right. God knows your hearts. What's exalted among men is an abomination before God. Where is there more self-justification? Maybe there's more self-justification somewhere else. But let's ask ourselves this question. Where is there more self-justification than when it comes to how we spend our money and how we use our possessions? But and why do we do that? Well, it's oftentimes because what's exalted among men is not what is exalted before God. We know that if we justify ourselves before other people, they're going to exalt us. And they're going to say, yeah, no, don't worry. You're doing fine. Don't worry about it. I mean, if you come to me, I want to tell you, if you come to me and say, how do you think I'm doing with your money, with my money? I'm going to say, you're doing great, man. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Because it's so hard. It's so personal. Even I am not going to try to tell you what to do because it's so tough. I don't want to put that dagger in your heart. You're fine. So instead of asking, well, what does Scott think of this, or what does someone else think of this, or what does anybody think of how I'm spending my money? Because that's not going to be a question that's going to result in anything that's unbiased. Let's ask this question. What does God think of how I'm managing my money? What does God think of it? Don't try to please me. And don't try to please anyone else with how you spend your money. Make friends with your wealth. I'm not saying something that's against that in the beginning, but don't try to please me or anyone else and bring before your budget and say, is this right? Simply think, if Jesus were my financial planner or in control of my budget, what would he change? What would he change? Let Jesus in. He's a gentle shepherd coming in with his rod, steering us in the right direction. He's not coming in and saying, hey, I want you to do something that's impossible, and just thrashing us around. As Paul says in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, I'm not asking you to be generous with what you don't have. just with what a person does have. He's not asking something unreasonable of us here. But let him in. Let him in. He knows what is best. And if we want that reward at the end, if we want the true wealth at the end, we need to let him in. And we need to listen to how he tells us to run our finances and to use our money. So how can we get better at using our money in a generous way? How can we get better at making friends with our possessions so that we can be received into eternal dwellings? Let's ask this question. How was this shrewd manager able to do that? I mean, that was just such a generous thing for him to do, to cut people's bills down by so much. How did he do that? How was he so generous? He was so generous because it wasn't his wealth. It was easy. It was an absolute piece of cake. In fact, it didn't hurt him at all. He said, yeah, it's my master's wealth. Sure, cut it down by 50%. Let's cut that down by $70,000 there, you know. No biggie, right? That's how he was able to do it. It wasn't his wealth, and it's not our wealth either. Notice verse 12. Jesus actually says this. He says, and if you have not been faithful in that which is another's, who will give you that which is your own? Jesus is saying here, he's given us what is his. What we have is not our money, our possessions. They're God's possessions. It's God's money. And you know, when the master's not looking, you can give away his money as much as you want. In fact, the master says he is looking, and he says, I want you to make friends with it. Be generous with it. It's like working at a restaurant and having no guilt for just giving away free food. By the way, don't give away free food at a restaurant. I'm not telling you to give away someone else's possessions that they've given charge of you for. Give away and be generous and make friends with the possessions God has given us charge of. That is motivating because in reality, it's such a tedious thing to run other people's possessions. If you've ever been a financial planner for someone else, it's always really tedious. I was an accountant in college, and so every once in a while, people will call me and they'll say, "Well, what should you do for retirement?" You know, and they think I know something about that, as if I had a finance degree, you know, and accounting's different. And so I kind of step back and I'm like, well, I don't want to tell you how to manage your money. It's kind of this tedious thing. I'm really scared. I don't want you to be mad with how I tell you to run your money, you know, run this money. I don't want to manage it. I'm really scared of that. It's the same way. It's kind of this tedious thing when we realize that we're holding on to things that are God's. But the good news is that Jesus says here that one day, if we manage the things, his things, well, he's going to give us what is our own. No longer will it be managing his possessions in eternity. It'll be managing what is rightfully ours because he has given it to us by his grace and his mercy and his generosity. And we've proved that we're faithful in a little. And so he'll give us a lot. How are we doing in this, brothers and sisters? I hope that we will allow Jesus into our heart to probe around a little bit and focus on the eternal possession that he wants to give us. Focus on being faithful with what he's given us now. If you need help in your walk with God, then we urge you to make your relationship right with him. Let's transform how we think about our time, how we think about our money, how we think about our talents and our opportunities and all the gifts that God has given us. God has given us all these things so that we will steward them well, so that we will serve people with them, not serve ourselves. How can we become better servants of those stewards of those things to make friends of other people and to do what God has told us. If you need help in your walk with God, come for the front while we stand and sing.